don't know where he's gone. He's disappeared. Oh, he's up there.
Yeah, so they don't call me Twinkle Toes Douglas for nothing. No, they never called me Twinkle Toes Douglas at all. I'm going to be speaking from the Psalm 20. It's page 553 in the Church Bible, so it might be worth following that passage there in Psalm 20, just to see the highlights and check that what I'm saying actually comes from the passage itself. Mighty inspiring service last night, I have to say. I was hoping Kathy Yates was here because the treasurer gave a wonderful exhortation to giving last evening. That took 15 minutes. And then the actual prayer took another 5 minutes. The collection took another, it only took about 6 minutes, actually, it turned out. But the exhortation was quite amazing and quite wonderful. And much to be inspired. Yes. So, there it is. If you fancy an alternative, a change, whip across to the Excel Centre and get yourself revived and refreshed there as well as being here. What am I saying? Well, I'm getting my P60 tomorrow from the leadership. Anyway, Psalm 20. We plan these themes quite well in advance, Canley. This material was set, I think, at the end of February. And normally you'd like to think there was some type of order in what we do and direction in what we do. It wasn't until I read again this psalm in the context of this week that I realised God's way of doing things, really. Because of the 160,000 men and some women who were involved in the landings of D-Day events 70 years ago, there would have been many padres and chaplains and thousands of New Testament and Psalms given to the servicemen of the Air Force, the Navy and the Army in not only Britain but the American forces and also all the Allied forces as well. And the chaplains couldn't have done better than to have read the first verse of this to their charges as these men left Britain to prepare to serve these passages, to save their people and their nations. These words may have rung in their ears and they may have read them in the Psalms. May the Lord answer you when you are in distress. May the name of the God of Jacob protect you. May he send you help from his sanctuary and grant you support from Zion. What did the Lord's protection mean in this situation? Particularly for the 2,500 servicemen who died on the beaches of Gold Beach and Sword Beach and Omaha in the next 2 days as they re-entered Europe. And also the 2,000 civilians who died as well in the first 2 days of that. There are many stories, weren't they, have been told during the course of this week of those who have people that they remember, those they've mourned for many years of their lives, those who have expressed gratitude and deliverance. I was listening on Thursday morning to a gentleman called Jim, and he was speaking more about his friend Frank than anything else. But Jim and Frank were close mates throughout their school days. They were very committed Christians, Jim and Frank, and they argued intensely as the prospect of war in Europe came and broke out. They argued intensely about the moral issues of fighting in a war, and they came to firm conclusions. But what did they know? They were only 16. As many of the people who were buried in France and throughout Europe would be 18, 19, 20, 21, and some of those ages were probably incorrect because people signed up before they were able to. Jim became convinced and confirmed pacifist. He believed that it was wrong to fight in a war as a Christian. It doesn't mean he wasn't a combatant. He served as a non-combatant in the war. His friend Frank served in the army. They came to two very different opinions. Both were on the landing crafts on D-Day. And both were sent into the waters. Jim, as a medical officer, three times went back onto the beach to give medical attention while under fire to people who were injured on the beach and rescue them. Jim went on into France and died two years later in the war itself. Both trusted in the Lord as their protector. Both believed in the power of these words. May the Lord answer you when you are in distress. May the name of the God of Jacob protect you. And Jim's testimony, just story, as he was telling that story throughout the interview, he said, it was my faith that got me through, and it's my faith that has lived with me for these 70 years following that person, my Lord and my friend, Jesus Christ. I want to ask, just as to come to this passage, Psalm 20, who is the you in verse 1? May the Lord bless you when you are in distress. May the name of the God of Jacob protect you. Well, clearly it is, as it says, those who are distressed. Those who feel overwhelmed by the forces they face or the situations they're about to face. Could be anyone and anything. We should always take Psalms personally. They're the prayers of the distressed, those who call out to God for God to help them in their needs. They are the most personal part of the Bible. So they're partaken to themselves. It could be anyone. Anyone facing the pressures at work that seem to overwhelm them and come upon their lives. Could be anyone who are fighting the struggle to get out of bed in the morning because they just can't feel they're able to cope. It could be anyone struggling with those things, with the facing the temptation not to fall into old patterns of thinking and behaviour that destroyed their relationships and themselves in the past. Anyone who is overcome the problems of finance, money, and life situation. You know, it could be you. In fact, it has been you. I know those stories are in this service. People who are able to say, God is my protector because he has brought me forward. He has helped me. He has given me strength when I was on my knees, when I couldn't help. And only he could do that. He has helped me in my distress. And so, there's a part of the song which is about celebration. In verse 4 and 5, it's the words of a group of people, not just one person, not one person calling out to God, but the people calling out to God and saying, may he give you the desires of your heart and make all your plans succeed. May we shout for joy at your victory and lift up our banners in the name of our God. It's always good to recognise when God is doing something good in people's lives, isn't it? It's very important to say, it's great to see you walking that way. Thank you that that's changing in your life. So often, isn't it, in our experience, that we see each other in a particular way. And when people start behaving and living in a different way, we respond in such a way that puts them back in the box. Have you ever had that experience? You know, you've made a commitment to do something and say, what are you doing that for? You know, it's not you. Get back in your box, as it were. And it's easy to do. We see people in a failure mode so often, when in point of fact, in God's view, they're not failures, they're in him and successful. And we need to encourage each other and say, thank God that you're walking this way. It's great to see you looking so well, so capable, so able and rejoice in that good. It's the God of Jacob who does this in verse 1. Here we have a wonderful contrast, don't we? It's a contrast between somebody who is very, very vulnerable and somebody who is very, very great and powerful. Jacob here in this passage in verse 1 is both a person and a people. It's both the son of Isaac and I'm trying to think of Isaac's wife. No, you've lost it. You've missed the opportunity. Rebekah. That's right. The son of Isaac and Rebekah. And also a name for the people of Israel themselves. The people of Israel themselves. And both were very weak. Both were very vulnerable. Both sometimes found themselves abandoned by God and felt not worthy of his care. Isaiah is a wonderful prophet. I don't know if you can see those words there. They're from Isaiah 40. He says, and this is God speaking through Isaiah to Jacob, "Why do you complain, O Jacob? Why do you say, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord? My cause is disregarded by my God. Why do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary. He is not understanding, no one can fathom. He gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak." What he's saying, quite simply, Jacob, you feel abandoned, but look at this God who is on your side. He is the one who strengthens weak souls. He is the one who lifts the powerless. He is the one who stands for those who cannot stand for themselves. This is our God, says Isaiah. He goes on to say in chapter 41 as well, in equal small print and contract edition for those who can't see the screen, he says, "But you are Israel, my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, you descendants of Abraham, my friend. I took you from the ends of the earth. From its farthest corners I called you. I said, you are my servant. I have chosen you and have not rejected you. So do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with his righteous right hand." It's called I Am for a reason. It means I am here, the present one, the one who is with you and with you and me. So this is this God who hears the distressed of his people. Who is this you in Psalm 20, verse 1? Well, he's also God's anointed, God's king. And it's this wonderful, simple idea that the people of Israel, David's subjects, are saying, "Lord, bless this king who leads his people possibly into battle." And that repeated use of the word "may" in verse 1 and verse 2 and verse 3 and verse 4 and verse... That's verse 4, isn't it? Is a wish prayer. May the Lord answer you. May he send you help from his sanctuary. May he remember all your sacrifices. May he give you the desires of your heart. May prayers are wish prayers, are desire prayers, are aspiration prayers. We don't know quite if we're going to get this, but this is what we're asking for. For you, O King, you may not come back, but we wish this for you as you lead forth in battle, and also the people who go with you, our sons and our husbands. So it's a petition prayer. It's a petition prayer for a king and a nation. I think it was 3.5 years before the D-Day landings on Sword and Golden Beach as well. 3 years before that, there was a National Day of Prayer for an evacuation. King George VI on Sunday, May the 26th, 1940, called the nation to a day of prayer. Probably didn't tell them what they were praying for. At that point, the Allies were preparing to evacuate much and as many of the Allied forces off, of those forces based in Europe, off European soil at Dunkirk. amazing fleet of anybody's boat that could float was sent out for that rescue operation. King George VI called the nation to pray at that crucial time in our history. This is a prayer for the nation, a prayer for the people. Apparently, George VI was a real man of faith. There's a real history of faith in our monarchy in Britain. Not all of it necessarily good, but George VI apparently was a real committed Christian. There are quite a few stories, probably some of them apocryphal, of his prayer life and his expressions of prayer. There's a story told of this occasion when, during the day of prayer, at the beginning of it, he was found at his bedside simply doing that, kneeling in prayer. Normally, his butler would just come and do what they did and just leave the monarch to continue in his prayers. And at last point, the king turned to his butler and says, "If I can kneel before the King of Kings, you can do that as well. Let's pray together." And that reminds us very simply the fact that this is a prayer to a greater king. This is a prayer about a greater anointed. I want to take your imagination away for a few moments from this psalm, because the anointed here is King David, but also many Christians in the first century used it as a prayer to celebrate the victory of another king. Another king who knelt in a garden and prayed the night before his greatest battle. And I just want to just look at that passage for a few moments. It's found in Matthew chapter 26. It's the prayer of Jesus in Gethsemane. He went with his disciples, Peter, James and John, and he was said, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me." Going a little farther in verse 39, he fell with his face to the ground and prayed, "My Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken from me. Yet not as I will, but as you will." Jesus is doing this prayer wish here, isn't he? Using the word may. Facing this cup of suffering that's been presented before him, just drawing near to him, his hour of death, his hour of battle, his hour of fight against sin, against evil, against wickedness in this world, which he is going to submit himself to. He's praying and saying, "Father, if it's possible, if there's another way, please let this cup pass from me." It praises several times. And in this praying, he knows he does something quite different, which is quite profound. Firstly, he submits passively to the will of God. In this prayer, he simply says, "Not as I will, but as you will." When faced with the overwhelming situation, he gives himself up to the cup and the situation that he faces. Secondly, and second time he prays this prayer, this prayer changes very significantly, but very small way. It says in verse 42, he went away a second time and prayed, "My Father, if it is not possible for this cup to be taken away unless I drink it, may your will be done." He prays significantly differently at this point. He realizes that the will of God is for him to go through this cup of suffering. So he submits passively to it. But the second time he prays and says, "It's not possible." And then he prays not passively for the will of God to be done. He prays actively for the will of God to be done. He's not saying, "Your will be done, I give in to it." Now he's saying, "Your will be done, let it be achieved. Let this death achieve what you need it to do, to defeat sin, to pay the price for sin, to defeat evil in this world, to do that. May your will be done." And there's a difference in that praying, isn't there? Most of us will not have the choice about the cup of suffering in our lives. When that comes for us and when it comes towards us, we will not often be able to decide whether to receive this difficulty, this stress, this pressure. It will come to us, or it won't. And we can illegitimately pray, Father, if it's your will, I cannot take this. Please take it away. In fact, in the first prayer, Jesus is praying the prayer he prayed for us. Deliver us from evil. That's what the prayer is. But once we come to that point of suffering, when we give ourselves to what God has given to us, we can pray the second prayer and pray, Lord, make this work, make this benefit, make this not be an end in itself, make this be an active of your will being done. May your will be done in earth as it is in heaven. We may not get to choose the cup of suffering that we face, but we can choose how we face it. I think a wonderful example of that is that young man, Stephen Sutton, who recently died of having cancer. And what did he decide to do? And so far he was able to do it, and it's not always possible for people in sickness to do this. He made a decision to make his life count. And he did it in a particular way. He said, I'll choose the way I live, even though I'm facing this trial. So submitting to the will of God passively, but then doing it actively and say, your will be done, is the way we can do that as Christians. It's not always possible, but we can choose to do that. Here is the Lord, our protector, and Jesus does that, doesn't he? He hears the prayers of the distressed. He saves his anointed servants, and he also strengthens us for the future struggle. There's a very close parallel between the death of Jesus and what happened at D-Day 70 years ago. It's not unique to me, preachers have mentioned this before, but the death of Jesus and the D-Day events were both decisive events that left to a future prospect. Certainly true that once the Allies had achieved their goal of getting onto land in France in 70 years ago, the war itself was almost to come to an end within a year, as it did 13, 14 months later. The death of Jesus was so decisive that something wonderful happened, that death was fought with. Sin was fought against. The evil was defeated. But on both occasions, when you think about it, there was still struggle. There was still warfare. There's still a telephone. No, it's a member of the congregation that should be here, actually. So I'm not ringing them back. Yeah? Where are you? Right. There's that wonderful thought, isn't there? That though there was going to be struggle, and though there was going to be suffering, and though there was going to be prices to be paid, the victory, in that sense, not against the people, but against an evil force, was achieved. And that's true of our experience as Christians. Christians talk a great deal about the victory of Jesus, but the victory of Jesus needs to be lived through us. And it will mean us sometimes suffering. It will mean struggling. It will mean hard work. But the victory is ultimately going to be achieved. That's why, for the Christian church, the focus of this prayer is not militarism. It's not warfare. We're not the Lord's people delivering God's judgment in the earth. We're not the Lord's army in that sense. We're the Salvation Army. In a better sense, delivering a kingdom of peace, justice, righteousness, and hope, and joy, and life in the gospel. The battle still goes on, and that's why Paul says in Ephesians 6, your battle is not against physical things, flesh and blood. It's against powers and authorities. It's against spiritual forces of wickedness in this dark world, still active, but ultimately will be defeated. Therefore, put on the whole armour of God, so that in the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground. And having done everything to stand, stand firm then, with the belt of truth buckled round your waist, and the breastplate of righteousness, and your feet fitted with the readiness that comes from the gospel of peace. Be strong in the Lord, says Paul. The battle is not physical, it is spiritual. Indeed, it's the forces behind the physical forces in our world that need to be defeated in prayer, in action, in love, in how we deal with each other. So the war does go on. Be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. And that's why I've chosen us to sing a last song. It's called You Are My Hiding Place. It's 625. And I'd like us just to sing that. We'll remain seated as we sing it to recognise where we are. All the things in the passage of Ephesians 6, the breastplate of righteousness, the belt of truth, the gospel of peace for our feet, the helmet of salvation, the sword of the Spirit. All of these things are things given us by Jesus. They're his victory, his activity, his life in our lives. Let's bring ourselves to that Jesus now as we worship him. You are my hiding place.